The workshop that we're doing is using the graph in Dune to power on-chain actions. My name's Christian, this is Matthias, and we're from Component. You can find us at component.fi. And we'll quickly go through the agenda so you can get an idea of what we're doing here. So first things first, I just wanted to mention that this will not be a code along. We wanted it to be, but some of the dependencies required, you need pretty good Wi-Fi to download them, so you'd have to run to the basement and come back up. We don't want that, so instead we'll just discuss some of the things that you would have coded. So one, we want to get to know each other. I think that's you know, why a lot of us come here, is to find like-minded individuals. Two, we're going to do an overview of the Web3 data stack, so give you an idea of like the different layers of the Web3 data stack and how you can use them. Three, we're going to do essentially an example that goes through that you would have coded along, but instead we'll just kind of show you how we did it and can give you the information so you can do it yourself later. And that'll be data fetching, so the data fetching process, data processing and modeling, so what you do with that data after you fetch it, and then transaction execution. So essentially a way to grab data, process it, model it, and then have that do an on-chain action, a transaction for you. And then at the end, we'll do breakout sessions, just at your tables or whoever you're standing next to. Instead of the coding element, we'll just essentially design your own automation, speaking with your table. We'll walk you through it.
We'll do some engineering instead of coding.
Cool. So this is actually my email. I don't know if you're familiar with Questrade. It's a Canadian company for trading stocks and using derivatives. I got margin called a lot, as you can see. It wasn't that much money, it's okay. But I'm not a good trader, basically. And that's kind of my motivation for what we're doing. Because I got margin called so much, I know I'm a bad trader. You know, maybe automating things and having you know, logic do it for me is probably a better idea. So that's specific to DeFi, but of course, there's many other ways that you can take what we're going to show you and use it, you know, across anything that's built on the blockchain. Okay, so we want to start with everyone just kind of talking to each other at their tables. You know, you could get to know each other, maybe introduce each other. But here's a prompt based on what I just showed you, you know, from myself. And that's a time when things didn't really go your way in Web3. So that could be, you know, you lost money trading derivatives, you know, not in Web3. You can talk about that too. A time when maybe you suffered a lot of impermanent loss, or you can say good things too. I mean, or a time when you should have sold the NFT at the top, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, take 5 minutes and chat with the folks around you.
So we're going to give a little overview of the Web3 data stack. There's a lot here, and we are not going to have everything. So absolutely, if you're a, you know, a data protocol, please reach out. Maybe we can add it to our slides. So we'll start with this nice little visual from Andrew Hong on Twitter. This was made about 8 months ago. And so here's a breakdown of a lot of the different sort of layers of the Web3 data stack, you know, mostly relating to Ethereum and EVM chains. So obviously you have your sort of base layer where you're actually running clients, interacting with, you know, the Ethereum blockchain state directly, reading logs, call data, etc. You have nodes as a service, so you don't have to do that yourself, but you're still operating on those sort of raw data streams. And then you have a layer on top of that. You can think of that as, you know, the query and data mapping layer. There's a little more structure there. Often these things are indexed. You know, they're potentially, you know, Dune Analytics takes your ABIs and does some contract decoding, so you can actually read the parameters and the function names instead of looking at a bunch of hex codes. There's Flipside and the graph, and everybody knows those. Then there's sort of that layer on top, and this obviously encompasses a lot of things, but they're higher touch, much more customized APIs. The data might be a lot more contextualized and a lot more useful for specific applications, but potentially a little more obtuse. Some APIs, you know, are that data processing is happening in the background and you don't necessarily know. So those are things like, you know, Covalent, Etherscan, some, you know, manual tagging systems like through Nansen. And then we have a few that we use pretty regularly, so we wanted to make sure they made it on there. And a lot has changed in the last eight months. So people know CryptoStats, David Mihai. They run like crypto fees and L2 fees and all of those different front ends. They built a little, you know, data processing stack to make it easier to build front ends with subgraph data. The Dune is releasing their API. We mentioned the Dune, but API changes things pretty significantly. We use the Messari standardized DeFi subgraphs pretty much on a daily basis. They've created, you know, an open standard for different kinds of DeFi primitives across chains. If you want a little more control, ETTL and TrueBlox are pretty great. They're both, you know, open tools allowing you to index from your own node, even the ETTL data is available in a BigQuery database. So you don't actually have to do your own indexing if you don't want to. DeFi Llama, you know, they pump out a ton of new APIs and new protocols. Their adapters are a pretty cool system. And then we have another one, Spec. Allow you to sync your own Postgres database with, you know, TypeScript transformers, bringing in call data, or sorry, bringing in, you know, transaction data, indexing it, and then bringing it into your own Postgres database to live beside your own data.
Cool. So this is the process, as I mentioned, that we're going to be going through. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to do data fetching. And for each of these sections, we're going to talk about the alternatives to what we're doing. So to give you like a little bit of flavor, so you're not stuck with one thing. Then we'll run through the example that we actually did. Just an overview, data fetching, processing, modeling, transaction execution. So our example is using Python to collect data and write a simple prediction model. The three steps are pulling ETH price data from the graph in Dune, just to have kind of two data sets to compare and to show you, you know, two different ways that you can do it. And then using a autoregressive moving average model to predict price movement. I wouldn't use that approach at home, but you know, for this presentation, it works. Basically, if price go up, swap USDC to ETH on Uniswap. That's the transaction that will automatically happen.
Obviously, this was built originally as a code along, so we tried to keep it as simple as possible. A lot of this can be expanded on pretty thoroughly. So obviously we went over that data stack and there's so much there, so many different choices to be made. And like any other choice you're making when building a product, it's mostly about trade-offs, engineering choices. So we wanted to talk about some considerations to keep in mind. There are definitely others, but some big ones are available fields. Do they actually have the information that you need to use? The data format, are you going to have to wrangle all this data to get it, have it usable in your automations? Scope, does it cover the chains and protocols that you want to use? Are you going to have to, you know, merge different data streams in order to get information from cross-chain, cross-protocol? Is it event-driven or is it polled? You know, flexibility, can you extend the model? Stability, are they going to change their interface on you while you're running your automations and break everything? Because for some reason, we still don't version control APIs everywhere. Latency, if your application requires is real time, you can't be operating an hour behind blocks. Trust, reliability and redundancy. Openness of the actual transformation functions. So, you know, understanding how that data was transformed from, you know, raw inputs to the data you're looking at now, and then openness of the data itself. You know, if you want to be able to inspect the internal state, can you just get a dump of the database and check it out? Those are all some pretty important things. So we are, in our example, we are just fetching ETH/USD price data from both Graph and Dune. Of course, this could be done through most of the APIs that we mentioned. We like working with both tools, and so this was just a nice little example of using those. Handle Dune first?
Yeah, we'll start with Dune. So very simple query here. We're actually just using a Dune-created or user-created table, which gives you prices of different ERC-20s on layer one Ethereum. And here you can see we're basically just pulling in the time, which we're changing to hour because we want hourly price. And then we're doing the average of the price of ETH over that hour. And then we're doing the max price and the min price during that hour for the last 30 days.
And you'll see this query has a query ID here. That's going to be relevant in a second.
Cool. So, yeah, as we said, we don't have access to the Dune API right now. If someone from Dune is here, please let us know. We'd love to use it. So instead, we're using this open source SDK that grabs essentially the data from a query. It's limiting in the sense that you can't actually run the query using this. So you basically, you know, every time you want to do this, you'd have to go back to Dune, run the query, and then come back here, and it'll update after you run this function. But yeah, basically, it's just grabbing kind of that static data from the query the last time it was run. Then, if you just scroll up a little bit to data 123. Yeah, just quickly mention this. It's not that significant, but we're basically just changing the JSON format that we get in the response, and we're turning it into a pandas data frame. Are people here familiar with pandas data frame? A lot of nods. Okay, cool. Rows and columns. Cool. And then, yeah, I'll pass it over to you.
Yeah, there's a little bit of processing here to get the data wrangled so it's consistent across both Dune and the Graph. This one is the Graph data pull. So we're specifying the endpoint. We're just using a Chainlink prices subgraph here. In fact, this data isn't actually hourly data. So we first, we're using GraphQL to query the graph. We're just looking for the ETH-USD asset pair. We're ordering by timestamp so we get the newest data. We're ordering descending, and we're grabbing the first 1,000 prices as well as the timestamps associated with that. Then we do the exact same thing here, except we do one thing, which is resampling, so that we only end up with, one timestamp every hour, or one price every hour instead of multiple. And here's just an example of the outputs. You'll notice that there's actually inconsistency between price and price here. That's because the Dune table actually does this in decimal format, while the graph here, this subgraph specifically, looks like eight decimal points. The fact is we're running this model separately, so it doesn't really matter for this example, but it's just one of those things to pay attention to. Obviously, your data needs to be consistent.
Yeah, and one thing I'll mention about that as well is it's actually great to use more than one data source, just so you can actually check these things. It's hard to know what the source of truth is. So, using different data sources, checking them against each other, maybe before you run something is always a good idea. And another thing is, we didn't really mention this, but with the data we're pulling, this is a simple example, but the really cool thing is that, anything on chain is fair game in terms of data that you can use. So think, LPing, lending protocols, on-chain derivatives protocols, NFTs, it doesn't have to be DeFi related. You can do some pretty sophisticated stuff with different types of data. So yeah, moving into this section now. So data processing and modeling, now we're at the point where we have the Dune query and the Graph query pulled in using Python, and now we want to model it essentially. So before we jump back into the code, there's just a few considerations. Kind of like just what I said with like, there's so much composability when it comes to data. There's also infinite composability when it comes to modeling. You know, you could use, instead of using a time series prediction, you could do conditional logic, like, you know, maybe there's someone you follow that trades really well, and anytime that they make a trade, you want to mimic it right away, you know, stuff like that. Or if you know someone like me is not a good trader, you can take the opposite position. Then of course, there's so many types of machine learning algorithms, time series predictions, the list goes on for the types you can do.
And again, I know we're focused on DeFi for that presentation, this presentation, because that's mostly what we interact with. But, you know, if you're really into stable diffusion and you want to see text generated images, you could always grab, you know, text from your Lens protocol interactions and generate an image based on it and mint an NFT on chain if you wanted to, something like that. You know, that's really up to you. Because all this computation is done off chain, the sky is the limit.
Cool. So quickly, just on the, I guess, the modeling, we already did the processing, I guess, earlier when we just reformatted stuff into a pandas data frame. So here it's quite simple. If you're familiar with like a little bit of data science, I'm not a data scientist myself, but what we do is we basically split the data that we pulled in, so the Dune data and the graph data, and we split it into a train and test set, just basically 80% train, 20% tests, not that sophisticated. And then what we plot it, and we'll show, you know, we'll show the results after. And then we run it through a ARMA model, so autoregressive moving average model, to essentially predict. So we're doing this by hour, and the goal here is to predict whether the price of ETH in USD is going to go up in the next hour. And so the logic here is basically just if the next hour price is greater than the last price, then we want to buy ETH. If it's less, then we want to sell or short or what have you.
It's that easy, folks.
Not financial advice. Cool. Yeah, these are the results. So as you can see, the red here is the test set. And we are basically, you know, the prediction is basically saying it's trading sideways. Maybe, I think it probably goes down about $10 roughly. If anyone knows the crab strategy on Squeeth, this would be a good time to use it, I guess. Yeah, these are just the results.
Yeah, so the most Web3 relevant, probably the most complicated one, step in automation here is transaction execution. So there's a number of ways to do it. So bringing these insights back on chain. So there's tons of considerations to think about. Which chains you're operating on, is the environment adversarial? So are you, you know, if you're working in DeFi, then you're probably looking out for MEV and sandwich attacks, anybody trying to exploit your model. If you're, you know, minting NFTs for art purposes and not for financial purposes, it's probably less of a big deal that someone front runs you. What kind of timeline are you operating on? You know, some things have much larger delays than others. Key management, do you want to manage your own keys? What kind of permissions do those keys have? Should your logic be transparent? So, you know, if you're running a proprietary training algorithm, you probably want that to be executed off-chain and just have the results posted to the chain. But if you're running something that you want to be transparent, you would likely want the computation to be visible on-chain. You know, what happens if a transaction fails, if it's or it's congested. These are things that are annoying for manual transactions, but if you're not taking them into account when you're automating transactions, you can get something stuck in the mempool forever. You can potentially end up not being able to transact if you're not, you know, replacing that transaction and replacing that nonce. So there's a bunch of options. There are almost certainly others as well. And these are not necessarily mutually exclusive. They're just kind of ideas of part of it. So, you know, libraries that wrap on top of, you know, the wallet APIs that translate JSON RPC, Ether's Web3JS, Web3Pi, which we're using in this example. If you're running something like that, it's probably in some sort of function that you can either be running, you know, locally or on a cloud. You can, use traditional cloud service providers, or, Tenderly has their new Web3 Actions, which is effectively lambdas for Web3 interactions that can be triggered by events. Keeper networks. Some Keeper networks support like more complex off-chain logic. Some only support triggering, transactions with a function signature. There are transaction execution services. So something like Open Zeppelin Defender Relay and Infura Transaction Services, they handle a lot of these questions that are kind of annoying for a small development team to deal with. So things like key management, they allow you to hook into a KMS system. They also handle, figuring out gas fees. So if a transaction fails in the first, or a transaction is waiting too long in the mempool because it doesn't have a high enough gas price assigned, then it will actually ramp those up progressively, and it tries to figure out, how much gas do we need to be able to execute this transaction in a certain amount of time, that being the variable you set. You need to make the decision, if you're not actually doing execution and you're just posting data to the chain, then you might want to execute more like an Oracle model. So just posting data, you're not necessarily thinking about execution then, you're more thinking about on-chain execution, that is, you're more thinking about how do I get a reliable reliable posting of results to the chain. You can go through a multisig if you don't trust your automation. You could have them as one of the signers of a, one of two multisig, where they, basically are queuing up that transaction, send yourself a notification, and then accept or reject. That might be the most thing that most people are more comfortable with. You could potentially run some of this logic on an L2. So what's the name of the? Starknet itself.
The Oracle? The
machine learning model on Starknet.
There's a company called Modulus Labs. They're doing some pretty cool stuff. So they created this thing called RockyBot that basically does what Matthias was saying, where they're running, it's on Starknet, and they're leveraging that and just basically posting the result to the chain. So it's like a neural network on chain. It's very cool. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, and then I'm not very familiar with MEV or, being a searcher, so I'm sure there's other people who can expand on this, but in that case, you're probably using something more dedicated. You're building bundles using the Builder API, I believe. And for this example, we're just using, Web3.py. This is probably the thing that people are actually the most familiar with. We're just setting some variables. We're selecting our chain being Gurley. We're grabbing an RPC provider. There's some middleware that's required for Gurley here. We're grabbing a private key from environment variables, which of course means we have to manage that ourselves. Then we are, executing transaction. In this case, we are swapping on Uniswap V2's router. So we're grabbing the ABI, using that to encode our function signature, and setting some parameters and posting that to the chain.
Cool. So before we go into this, just wanted to recap. So we used Subgraph to pull ETH-USD price data. We used Dune to pull ETH-USD price data, and we processed it. We using Python pandas, and then we used Web3.py to actually send the transaction.
Actually what we were supposed to show. Just putting it all together. It's again. Three steps here, really. Well, grab graph and Dune, formatted data. Check with the model whether we should based on the graph model, whether we should buy based on the Dune model. And, if both are true, we are buying.
Yeah, and one more thing to say here is, so this makes it look easy. And that's actually what we're working on at Component. So we're working on something called Blueprint that abstracts away all the stuff we just had to do. Although it's really fun to learn how it's done, and you can definitely do it that way, and you know, to see how it's done under the hood. But what we do with that product is essentially try and take you to this step without having to do, you know, all the other stuff.
Okay, I guess it's me. You guys saw what we came up with. Now it's your turn. This might be a little long with the 10 minutes, but I'm sure everyone who came here has something in Web3 that they're passionate about. That thing probably is generating quite a bit of data. And that's probably available through one of the many services we mentioned. So we'd like you to take a little bit of time, explore some data sets, think about what kind of automation you could build using those as, you know, your input. You can work as individuals or as a group to start. After that, we're going to sort of have little 30-second pitches to everybody else in on your table. You'll decide on one to sort of design as a group.
Yeah, so just to, you know, give you an idea of what you could do. So anything in DeFi where, you know, you're triggering, you know, based on a prediction model or based on some conditional logic, could be to sweep the floor of an NFT collection, you know, the really anything you want and any data that comes to mind that's particular to you and what you're doing.
And I remind you to kind of be thinking about those three steps: where I'm getting the data from, how I'm going to process it, and then how I'm going to actually generate something actionable from it.
Yeah, go ahead. All right, folks. We're happy if a few people came up with an idea and like thought about the process. And I think did anyone come up with an idea? Raise your hand if you did. You want to talk about it?
So we think that kind of DeFi investing has been quite risky forever. And so the idea is kind of a generalized pressure release valve. So if a condition is met, whatever investment you have, if it crosses over that threshold, then pull out, you know, pull out to wallet, essentially. So you could think of a liquidity pool, you're invested in there, but if the two assets start deviating beyond a certain range, then you exit that position.
Thank you, Greg. Anyone else? You look like you have an idea. You do, okay. Quick pitch here. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I'll try to make it very quick. Yeah, what I've learned throughout a lot of very horrible loss experiences is that you have to optimize your buys. That's a strategy for centralized finance, I mean, centralized trading, but it does work for DeFi and LPing. And it's basically spotting when the price hits a threshold and when it's oversold within the Bollinger Bands, in the lower part of the Bollinger Bands, and you want to do that. You want to identify that buy signal throughout different temporalities. Like the weekly time frame, the daily time frame, and maybe no shorter term time frames, maybe the 3-day time frame, I don't know, but identifying buy signals throughout different temporalities using the Bollinger Bands. That's basically it.
Oh, is it working? Yeah, you look like you have an idea. No, okay, you have an idea, okay.
So we discussed an idea of auto rebalancing crypto index. So let's say you want to build a simple index that's like 50% wrapped BTC, 50% wrapped ETH. Over time, that balance is going to be different than 50-50 if the price of Bitcoin increases, for example. So maybe using some kind of feed like that to calculate the balance of your portfolio and rebalance every hour, week, whatever.
Cool. Yeah. Rebalancing, I think, is a very good use case, like in whether it's, you know, just a simple spot trading portfolio, or it's, you know, something a little more complicated, like LPing or lending or borrowing, that kind of stuff. Do we have time for one more, maybe?
Yeah,
We have a little time.
Okay.
It's okay.
Anyone else? Cool.
So, none of us were actually in DeFi space, but like, we actually thought about some other use cases. I'm working on a reputation computation protocol based upon pairwise trust, like who trusts whom by how much. And then my output would be basically the number crunching would be after all that recursive calculation, each peer in my network is assigned a trust score, right? And he's actually from the DAO space, and we talked about how we can actually use this type of algorithm in voting versus civil prevention. Typically, my algorithm is pretty good at identifying the civil clusters who actually trust each other, but none of the other real people actually trust any of them. So maybe we can actually ingest this data and then do that number crunching, identify those civil clusters, and then his DAO could actually emit something onto the contract. So as to flag those accounts as potential civil, maybe avoid them, things like that.
Cool, thank you. Maybe one more if anyone has one. If not, it's okay. Anyone keen to share? Adrian, you look like you want to share. You're writing your idea, right, on your phone? Okay, later, okay. Cool. Yeah, that's it. So we'll just wrap things up here. We don't have time for that, I don't think. So we'll just go to the last slide, I guess.
Yeah, if you want to run with any of these, just remember to think about, we have the basic idea right now, but there's a lot more to it. Think adversarially, where are the attack vectors? How could your strategy be manipulated, be defensive.
Yeah, and then just to close things out, to mention what we're doing again. So at Component, we're building something called Blueprint, and all of your ideas, except for maybe the last one, that sounded really cool, but it was a little over my head, but very, very cool. But for the DeFi related stuff, at least, and would love to talk to you about what you're doing to see if we can incorporate that in the stack. So if you have any ideas that you actually want to execute on, or you have, friends that want to build these kind of data driven strategies, we're building tools that basically make the entire process easy. So you only have to worry about the logic of what you're building. That wraps it up. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks a lot. I know it was an unconventional workshop, but I appreciate that everybody was talkative and, engaging instead of just hanging out on their phones and things like that. So it's great.